Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection. Because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today. And live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Trump is going to speak soon from the White House. And Ryan, you told me I shouldn't say this all the time, but I'll be able to say I was just there.
Oh, no, I think that you should say that over and over and over again.
No, I won't.
Like, oh, the White House?
It is
that
weird.
Old place.
It is. Yeah, exactly. It is weird to be on this side of it and to see and understand so much of the background, like the literal background of how everything functions there from a press standpoint and how close the press is set up so that people in the administration can just access the press whenever they, like Stephen Miller.
He just walks out
and he's like, let's go. Which is great.
Is he, when we see him standing, because he does a lot of interviews standing like in a road somewhere, is that in the press tent area there? Is that where he's going?
So, have you ever been to the White House?
No.
Oh, man, we got to take a trip.
Okay.
Steve's like, no. Steve, that's Steve, our boss, not Steve Miller. We didn't have. There
Steve
wasn't
Miller's
a situation.
Like, no,
he might be that way
back.
After the trip.
I don't know. So if you've ever been to the White House, there's Lafayette Square, and then there's these big, huge, tall black fences. I don't know. Are they like 20 feet tall or something like that? They're massive. And you can walk up there and take pictures with the White House and everything, and it's secure, but you can see through the lawn to the White House, of course. So along on the right side, if you were looking at the White House, on the right side, there's a door to go in, a huge, heavy door. And you go in there and that's like blocked off with more security. And then you've got to like present your ID. Secret Service runs your ID to make sure you're on whatever list, gives you a press pass if you don't have one, which I didn't. And like a physical press pass. And then for me, because I'm not a credentialed part of the press, like Fox News doesn't have credentials to give me. We didn't ask for them. I'm not an employee of Fox News. I could probably get credentials maybe from Odyssey, but I didn't have those. And so a lot of people who go in there on a regular don't have those specifically. You have to wait for an escort to come from inside the White House from the press team to come acknowledge you're good. So then after you get acknowledged, then you go through actual security, which is, you know, you get wanded or whatever, put all your bags through security devices. And then as soon as you're on the other side of that is where all of the networks have tents set up so that they're shot from all of their equipment. It's crazy. They're just in these green tents. And I mean, the tent is probably 8 feet wide, maybe 10 feet wide tops.
It's like a bedroom.
Just little. Yeah. Like, yeah. And so all of the equipment is in there, and then the reporter will stand kind of at the front of it with the beautiful White House in the background. We've all seen those shots. And then they just do their stand-up shots from there. And then the reporters will go from there over to the press briefing room if that's the same person, and it usually is, that like Peter Doocy would be on Fox News in the morning, and then he would go over and sit in the press briefing. Or Jackie Heinrich is another one who did it. So as you're leaving that row of... there's probably a dozen tents that are set up right there. It's just along a driveway. And that's where you've seen all of those posters that were stuck in the ground. They're lined up all the way through the driveway, all along the driveway, so that the press has to have these signs in the backyard, basically, background. You make a turn to the left to go to the press briefing room, and at that bend is a microphone that stood up, and then people can walk right out of the West Wing, which is right there, and just walk up to the microphone, and then the press, whoever is around from the press, just surrounds that person and starts shouting questions at them.
So it's not like they're going to something else and they happen to stop here at the press thing.
They
walk out
could be.
To that spot.
I mean, I would presume, like, the people who are in the West Wing go through a different entrance. The entrance that I'm talking about is the press entrance. You would not have to come and go and pass the press.
If you
walk out there, it's like you're choosing violence, is what I want to say.
No, that's kind of what I was asking.
You're like, all right, let's go. Something big happens, you want to take questions on it, go. If there's a controversy or something and you want to get your word out on it, walk out and let someone ask you the question.
Well, that's good to know, because then when we see people in that spot with that background,
it's a choice.
You know they have walked out to give comments to the press. And I do not remember, but I do not remember seeing a lot of that from the Biden administration.
Yeah,
certainly
outside.
Not from Joe Biden.
Yeah, if you think about how much you saw the press during Biden's administration, most of it's cringe on Pierre in the press briefing room.
Yeah. And it's binder.
I yesterday spent the morning in the press briefing with Carolyn Leavitt and Secretary Scott Bessent, Secretary of the Treasury, listened to that. And then after that, I knew that the president was leaving to go to Michigan. So I figured there's a portion of that day where it's going to be he's gone. And I would assume everything kind of settles down at the White House because a lot of the staff was traveling with him. And I knew that that meant that there could be some opportunities leading up to about 2 o'clock that we would be able to potentially, because that's all you do is you just sit there and wait for someone to say, oh, hey, there's a basic schedule that's listed at the beginning of the day. Like, for instance, the Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl championship celebration was while I was there, and I got to attend that because I was part of the press. And that was on the schedule because obviously everybody knows it's on the South Lawn. It's a big deal. Everybody needs to know that that's going to happen. But there could be many things that take place in between two scheduled events. So the press just sits and waits for something else to happen. Now, some of them might be doing call-ins to radio shows. Some of them might be doing hits on their television network. Some of them, if they're writers, might be writing articles in the meantime. So it's not like they're sitting doing nothing. But there is a lot of downtime. A lot of downtime. In between things. It's a lot of hurry up and wait. And I had to make a decision. I thought, I could have literally sat there from the time the press briefing got over, which was about 9 a.m. Eastern time, till 2 p.m. and done nothing.
Like, that's what I would have done.
I could have done that. I could have stayed there. And it, as I was sitting in Congressman Darren LaHood's office, C-SPAN's up there and President Trump is out there standing at those microphones.
No kidding.
Talking. And I was like,
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was very brief, but he was getting ready to go. He might have actually, now that I think about it, he might have actually been on the South Lawn getting ready to go up on Marine One because it takes off on the South Lawn. But what they would have done is ushered the press to the place, said the president's going to come take off. You can stay here. He might stop to talk, take questions. I was there and I don't regret that decision because I was able to go talk with Senator Eric Schmidt, and you guys aired that interview yesterday.
A lot of positive feedback.
I was going to say, I wasn't here, so I don't know what the vibe was about the conversation, but in being able to have this opportunity to go to Washington, D.C. and make of it, I can't stress enough how I was handed like a single block of wood and they're like, come home with something. You know, like they gave me the opportunity to do something with this. And whatever I wanted to turn that block of wood into, I could carve away and I could turn it into something. I was given the access and the freedom to roam about the cabin. And after that, it was like, and if you don't know what you're doing, if you don't know where you're going, it's like, what do you do with that? And so for the first half of the first day, I was very eyes wide open, just trying to soak everything in. And I made the decision that the best thing I thought that I could do for the people who were here, specifically you two putting the show together, and for the listeners of the station, was to go talk to people who you know who are there representing you. So I thought to myself after the briefing, what am I going to do? should I stay here and cross my fingers and hope? And maybe it materializes into nothing. Maybe I get to see and maybe ask a question of the president. Or I could go over to the Capitol and do what I ended up doing, which was talk to a senator and two congressmen. Both two congressmen, one congresswoman. So I elected to do that. I got a lot of content out of it. I wish I could have seen the president. I have zero regrets. I have zero disappointment. And I am so grateful to Stewart's American Mortgage and to Grasser Electric for making this possible for us. Wonderful partnership with them and sponsorship. We're going to take a quick break here because when we come back, we're going to have Congressman Darren LaHood's interview. I sat in his office with him and talked to him, kind of similar to what I did about with Eric Schmidt. When I was there, I thought they do the same interview over and over and over and over again. It's easy to ask about the 100 days, and I was going to do that. But I also wanted to make sure that I made it about things that matter to the people who are listening. So hopefully you felt like that when you listened to the Senator Eric Schmidt interview. When we come back, Congressman Darren LaHood, who's from Central Illinois, is going to be with us. And you'll get to see, and if you join us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel, you get to watch that interview as well. And then we'll talk a little bit about D.C. after that. What do you say? Go vote in the YouTube live chat poll and tell us your grade on the president's first 100 days. We'll be right back. I've been
needed. Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. So we were live coverage the earlier part of this week from Washington, D.C. I took the time yesterday to go visit with Congressman Darren LaHood. And I had a conversation with him, of course, about the Trump administration. He served in multiple administrations. So he asked him experience and how it might differ from president to president. But I also asked him some questions about Illinois, because if you don't realize this yet, Illinois went about +9 Trump in the last election compared to where they were the last time that Trump ran. The difference is that they've districted the state so poorly that +9 Republican vote showing up didn't actually end up affecting the state legislature at all. That's pretty amazing. Let's listen to the conversation that we had with Darren LaHood in Washington, D.C.
Well, we're sitting here talking with Congressman Darren LaHood of Illinois' 16th Congressional District. Thank you for the time today.
Great to be with you, Annie.
So I wanted to give you the opportunity to react to Donald Trump's 100th day. That's today. How do you feel about this administration? You've served in how many administrations?
I started in 2015, so Obama, Trump, Biden, and now Trump. Again.
How do you feel about the second term 100 days in?
Well, I think the president has done an excellent job in the first 100 days, much different than his first 100 days the last time around. And if you go back to the election last November, the president got elected, I think, for two reasons. One, fixing the unmitigated disaster at our southern border. And number two, fixing our economy, which people saw during the Biden administration had high inflation, high costs. There was a lot of uncertainty. And what the president's done since January 20th, I think, has been remarkable on the southern border. Crossings are down 95% on our southern border because he put back in the Remain in Mexico policy, mm-hmm. which basically says we worked with the Mexican government and their military to stop everybody on the Mexican side. Now, you can apply for asylum or become a green card holder or apply for legal citizenship, but you're going to do it on the Mexican side. So border crossings are down 95%. Secondarily, what he's done to put people that are illegally in this country that have committed violent crimes, sending them back to their country of origin is significant. And so whether it's going back to Venezuela or El Salvador or Mexico or plenty of countries in Central and South America, the president has followed through on his campaign promise to fix the unmitigated disaster at our southern border. He supported our border patrol agents on the southern border. And so that has been significant. And I think the American people understand that and support the president wholeheartedly on that. So I think he deserves an A-plus on that. Now, I think we have some work to do on the economy. Okay. We haven't brought the relief that we need to yet. But that's going to change very quickly.
Some of that work will be yours in Congress.
Absolutely. I serve on the Ways and Means Committee, which has jurisdiction of our tax bill. The tax bill we're going to get to the president's desk here in the next month is going to be significant in terms of bringing relief to working families throughout our district and giving a tax break to small and medium-sized businesses, to our farmers, helping to bring down inflation and also allowing people to have more money in their pocket. Remember, the first Trump administration, we had the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, created the best economy in my lifetime.
Yeah. So we've got the border. We've got the economy. Those are the two things that the president has highlighted through his press secretary this week as they're acknowledging the 100th day. My question is, you know, I talk a lot on my show about families. I've got kids of my own, and a lot of people who are listening, the stuff that takes place on Main Street is a little more familiar than a lot of the of course, big transformative ideas that the president is bringing to the table to reform our economy. I want to ask you, do you feel like, are you hopeful now in a way that you haven't been in the past? Or has that changed at all with Trump's second term? Do you see the hope for the American dream alive?
I do. And I think there was so much angst going into the election last year. And what I love about the election is our democracy showed that if you want to change the direction of the country, you can. And I think that renewed people's faith in our system. Because as I talk to people throughout my district, I think there was, you know, lots of concern that they were going to steal the election. It wasn't going to go the right way. But President Trump won. Not only did he win, Annie, as you know, he won overwhelmingly. Yep. All seven swing states, won the popular vote, got record numbers of African-American males and Hispanic males. And it showed that our democracy held. But if you want to change the direction of this country, you can. So I think that's given people a lot of hope and optimism. Now, the tough part is governing. And President Trump's doing everything he can, going up against, you know, mainstream media and people, that Democrats and others. But again, he's delivering on those promises. And I think people definitely have that hope and optimism. What he's done on cancel culture, what he's done on wokeism, what he's done on DEI, again, fulfilling those campaign promises, taking on our adversaries, particularly what he's done on China and ramping up, you know, what needs to be done to win the strategic competition against China. I mean, I think all those things are apparent to families in my district. People have hope. Still got a long ways to go. We got to keep implementing his policies, particularly on the economic front. But there's a lot to be happy about.
So you're listing a lot of things that have you excited about what's to come. I'm a Trump voter. I'm excited about what's to come. In the state of Illinois, Governor J.B. Pritzker doesn't really seem to be excited about what's to come. This past weekend at a fundraiser, he said, I don't know if I'm going to get the quote exactly right, but he wants to castigate them, us, at the soapbox and beat us at the ballot box. And I've been living through a few years here, as are the rest of us, of listening to the way the Democrats talked about rhetoric that led up to January 6th. Now we hear J.B. Pritzker saying very inflammatory things about how to push back against the Trump administration, and it sounds like the people who support him.
Well, I think it's disgraceful. I saw those comments. I read them. I saw them on TV. This is someone that represents Republicans and Democrats in the state of Illinois, and he's talking to half of our population in Illinois that are Republicans or conservatives, and you know, it's disgraceful, the language, and frankly disgusting, the language he used. And that type of rhetoric we shouldn't have in our politics. And again, we had an election in November, got a new administration. Now is not the time for rhetoric or politics. It's policy. It's implementing the things that we ran on. And frankly, that's what I'm focused on doing. Unfortunately, J.B. Pritzker is focused on politics and trying to get ahead. He, in many ways, has Trump deranged syndrome. He can't get over the fact that President Trump won and what he's doing to move the country forward.
So when J.B. Pritzker is speaking the way he's speaking, a lot of people assume he can't wait to be president, and that's where he's going. I enjoy listening to people criticize Trump's joking about a third term while we sit and wait and see if J.B. Pritzker is going to seek out a third term. Is he campaigning right now to be the president of the United States?
I think he is. And I think he, again, why is he not in Illinois, instead in New Hampshire on a Sunday night using that type of rhetoric? Again, I think that's a head scratcher for most folks in Illinois. They prefer to have him in Illinois. But again, I think this is going to come back to haunt him. He's up for election in 2026. We'll see if he runs or not. I hope he doesn't run. But if he does, we got to make sure we have a top quality candidate to show a sharp contrast between, again, the policies of the liberal, progressive, sanctuary city policies, and frankly, putting illegal immigrants ahead of the citizens of the state of Illinois. That'll be a narrative that we'll expose in next 2026 election.
So, Congressman, one last question, and we'll wrap it up here. Talking about what J.B. Pritzker might do in the next election, that means that Illinois could potentially see quite a sea change in the 2026 statewide election, along with the midterms. Trump was what he was like plus 8, maybe plus 9 in the state of Illinois.
Correct.
Congratulations to the Democrats on their districting to make sure that it doesn't reflect anywhere in the state legislature, of course. But I'm curious what kind of hope you would give Illinois voters about the midterms, about the statewides. We hold no statewide offices, is that correct? And a super minority in both chambers of the General Assembly. Do you think it could be different in 2026?
I do. If you look at the ground that President Trump made up in 2024, he closed the gap almost by 8 or 10 points in the state of Illinois. So he did, and he didn't even campaign in Illinois and made up a lot of ground. And so, if you look at some of the areas that he won in Illinois that traditional Republicans haven't won, that gives us some hope. Secondly, is as you saw this past week, Senator Durbin is not running again. We have an open U.S. Senate seat, first time in 25 years that we have an open Senate seat there. That gives us an opportunity to put up a good Republican candidate, and taking on J.B. Pritzker, who clearly is focused on running for president. We'll see whether he runs again for governor, but if he doesn't, again, that's an open governorship. We have a lot of good people that are interested in both of those seats, and that gives us a lot of hope as Republicans to fix the direction of Illinois. There is a lot of good folks in the state of Illinois that want to fix Illinois, and I'm a fourth generation Illinoisan, and that's where we're raising our family at. I still believe in Illinois, and we have some really, really good people. So that's what's going to keep me going, again, to do everything I can to stand shoulder to shoulder with the voters of Illinois to change the direction.
And just one quick follow-up. Do you have any advice to the Illinois part, the Republican Party, on making sure we get across the finish line?
Well, I think a couple things. We need to fix our election laws. We need voter ID in the state of Illinois, which we're working on at the federal level. We need to also focus on vote by mail, which Democrats have done a better job. That's the law of the land in Illinois. We have to do a better job in doing that. And I think we got to start recruiting now good candidates to run at every level, whether that's state rep or state senator or statewide office. Again, stepping up to be part of the solution in Illinois is a part of that. And so I think candidate recruitment can start now.
Well, Congressman LaHood, I appreciate the time. Thank you for welcoming me into your office, and I'd like to talk to you again soon.
Great to have you. Thanks, Annie.
Thank you so
much. Thank you.
So that was Congressman Darren LaHood from his office in Capitol Hill. And I thought we had a good conversation there about really the effect of the 100 days of Donald Trump in office, but also how we might be seeing that in Illinois coming up. Illinois has, I mean, we have the opportunity. Last Friday, I went to the Red Gala. I've been gone since then and was able to go to an event with over 1,000 people there to see Byron Donalds speak at the Illinois Republican Party. Red Gala is a new event. This is the second year that they've done that, I believe. And that room was full of people. And it's interesting to go do that in like Chicagoland area because I see all the same people. In a good way, in a very positive way, when I go to anything that's really downstate, which is basically everything but where I was. And there's a lot of motivation to get this one right in 2026. I'm excited about that part.
It was cool listening to you talk to Darren LaHood because I never really think about the fact that there could be things done for Illinois at the federal level. Obviously, that should exist. I just don't think about that. And the fact that he's there talking about that and you just talked to him, it was kind of encouraging.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think there's so we're just like on we're at the precipice of something that could be so in Illinois specifically. We had one caller say earlier that all Donald Trump would have to do is just not be Joe Biden. Like that would have been enough and he would have gotten a passing grade. In Illinois, there isn't much that needs to be done. There's a lot that could be done, but there's a lot that could just be undone that would free up the Illinois voters, the taxpayers, the citizens of the state to be prosperous once again. You see a lot of talk coming from J.B. Pritzker. He's always out there lobbing, you know, cherry bombs to try to make a point and to get the attention, but I don't really see him talking about policy in opposition to what Donald Trump is offering his people. And his state has an out-migration problem. A business out-migration problem. People don't want to come here to do business. People want to come to Illinois to have their abortions, and then they go back to their home state. Everybody I know complains about it. Even the Democrats in the state of Illinois know that it's a disaster.
Isn't that funny? I know a lot of people in Chicago just because of the fact that I went to college in SIUC, a lot of Chicago friends and stuff still. A lot of them in the communications industries and stuff up there. They're very few and far between of them are centrist, let alone Republican. They're mostly Democrats, and they hate it. They like certain aspects of Chicago, but it's the same stuff we like about Chicago. We like Lakeshore Drive. We like some of the energy that it used to have. You know, a lot of stuff going on all the time.
Do you think here's a big question that we can answer with zero evidence? Do you think that the Democrats cheat to win every election in the state of Illinois? I mean, what percentage of your mind considers that to be a reality? I'm thinking it's at least 25%.
25% of your mind
of my mind thinks that there's cheating involved in the political system in the state of Illinois.
I would agree with that. If the question is that they cheat in every election, I don't think that's the case. But Illinois and Chicago in particular have had such a bad reputation for election cheating since before that was a thing we talked yeah. about. That dead people voting and like mob stuff and whatever, all the stuff that you could possibly think of what election cheating looks like pre-Trump era was all, yep, that's Chicago. So there's no doubt in my mind that there's election cheating. It's just, what does it look like? How do they carry it out? How extensive is it? I don't know the answers to those things.
The Democrats hold every single statewide office in the state of Illinois. The Democrats hold a supermajority in the House, a supermajority in the Senate, so a supermajority in the General Assembly. Now, if you go to Missouri, my understanding is that there's a supermajority of Republicans in both chambers. And doesn't Missouri have every statewide as a Republican now? I believe they do.
I think so.
Just because that status exists in the state of Illinois, I don't think you can look at that and be like, well, they must be cheating. Unless you do the same thing on the Missouri side of the river where Republicans are elected. Like maybe Missouri is that red of a state. Maybe Illinois is that blue of a state. Do you know that if we win 22% of Chicago, the Chicago vote, 22% that we win the statewide elections.
That's wild. That's Cook County, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Do you know where it is now? Like, how far away from 22% is it at the moment?
I think that Darren Bailey got like 19 or something like that.
Really?
Yes. He was in shocking striking distance. The amount of votes that the Democrat Party has banked before the election, before Election Day, and the amount they get dumped in after Election Day is mind-blowing. That doesn't inherently mean that just because they're not voted on Election Day that they're not real ballots. But this is how they operate.
It seems difficult to not get 20% in anywhere, no matter where you go. There's always going to be a certain percent, even the reddest area of the country, you're going to have 20% of people show up and vote Democrat, you know? So that's surprising that it's that low that would tilt the rest of the entire state red.
It's pretty amazing.
It is amazing.
I think this will be in the conversation we have tomorrow in my interview with Congresswoman Mary Miller. I visited her yesterday as well and had a great sit-down conversation with her. Talked a lot about families and the future. So we'll have that for you tomorrow. But one thing that she talked about, and I'm not 100% sure we even this part was on the actual official interview, but she was talking about precinct committeemen and how we need them. We need great precinct committeemen and women. And she, this is a very simple concept, but I think people talk about that specific role a lot, and it seems complicated to me. And it she said it in a way that made it very clear. They need to know who their voters are in their district, in their precinct, I should say, and they need to get those voters to show up and vote. That's what the precinct committee man or precinct committee woman does. I mean, I'm sure they do more than that, but the point is, if you serve in that role, your job is to understand the people, the voting people who are in your district, and then you're supposed to show up and make sure that the Republicans vote. And if you're a Democrat precinct committeeman, you're supposed to show up and do whatever you need to do to make sure that the Democrats in your precinct vote. I feel like we could do better at that, of course, but like, how do we help the people who have signed up to do that? Are there precincts that don't have people representing? Is that something that you think that you would be good at and wouldn't even know where to start? If you think that you would be willing to fill in that capacity, you should message me on the Annie Fry Show Facebook page because I'll connect you with the right people.
That's like, something we need in this area?
Everywhere is needed. And if it's not the actual precinct committeeman or committeewoman, it's the help that you can provide that person who can maybe do the heavy lifting on it. And then you can find out, okay, well, you know, I know the people in my cul-de-sac. Let me find my precinct committee man or committee woman and say, let me talk to the people in my cul-de-sac. How can I help? Because it's not so much like we were saying before, you know, who do you know in Chicago who loves the job J.B. Pritzker is doing? They might despise the thought of a Republican being in office, but they're not going to tell you that J.B. Pritzker is doing a great job. And that's how Donald Trump got elected, because they couldn't support the guy who was in there doing the job, and enough people didn't show up or crossed over and voted for the other guy, maybe while they held their nose. How do you maximize turnout? Don't think about the state of Illinois. Stop thinking about Cook County and why it's such a problem. If you aren't working in your district, in your precinct, to help turn out five votes, you got to know five people, one household that's got a few voters in it, that you could show up and say, hey, it's really important that we vote in this election. Are you going to vote? Do you know about the candidates? And if they do know and they are going to vote, then the job is done. Encourage them to vote early and get their ballot banked. But like, focus on your area and then kick butt at it, because it's a turnout problem.
And I don't think we're just talking about door knocking. There are very sophisticated methods that these groups have now, and more as we go. You know, I've gotten to know, you've of course probably introduced me to some of these local people. We're going to the annual St. Clair County GOP golf tournament not this Monday, but next. Because those people, you meet them and you're like, you guys do a lot with a little. And so it's cool to see, you know, just how much is one person or even a few people are able to accomplish in our area, both Madison and St. Clair.
I'm glad you pointed that out because I'm not 100% sure, but I bet you could still get on that golf scramble, the St. Clair County GOP, if you find the St. Clair County GOP on Facebook or whatever. Sign up and go to that golf tournament and we'll be out there. We'd love to see you. The YouTube live chat poll, you need to grade President Trump's first 100 days, A, B, slash, C, D, or F. Come vote and tell us what you think, and we'll get to the results and some more of your comments when we come back. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. It is so good to be back in the studio. Here's the biggest takeaway that I have from being in Washington, D.C. The biggest takeaway that I have is that we are so blessed to get to do what we do for a living. The length of the workday, and I'm not saying this like as I didn't like being there because it was too much work or it was too long or whatever. My lifestyle right now does not fit into what these people have to do their jobs. And I'm saying that as a mother and as a wife. I was standing talking to some people in the press room at one point during the day, and one of them was talking about, you know, I hope I have, I'd really like to have a husband and kids one day. And they were just kind of like talking about the future, like they would like to have a family and kind of talking about how it's not really compatible. You got to be married to your job. And so, for some people, that's fine. And it's an opportunity of a lifetime. So you take it and you do it the best you can with it. But it's kind of amazing to see, you know, we get these little snippets of what these reporters are doing every day. We just get the clip that hits our social media feed or maybe makes it onto the news channels or whatever. It's a long day. It's a tough job in the sense that it's very competitive and it's very, well, I'll just say it's very competitive. And I just like, you know, the biggest thing about it is I was like, do these people know how to have fun? And it's not like they were not happy people. They were happy they're doing what they're doing, what they love. But I just think about how much fun we have every day. And like, that's not why they're there. That's not why they're supposed to be there. And I just thought, I like that we get to do what we do, like come in and have these conversations that we have. They go wherever they go and we have fun. I hope if you're listening that you have fun as well, of course. But it's just different.
There's not room for a goofy reporter there like a Gary Vood.
I don't know. I didn't try.
Mr. President. Gary Vood.
You can lobby if we get this opportunity again or some sort of D.C. opportunity again. You can lobby that Gary Vood goes.
I am. No. I will not do that. I will lobby that Ryan Wiggins goes and then bring a costume.
What was it? We're all Gary Vood.
We're all Gary Vood in a way. There's a little Gary Vood in all of us. I was really worried that you were not going to make it here today.
Why?
Because I was worried I was not going to make it here today.
Why?
I got a flat tire this morning.
I got a flat tire?
Well, okay. Look, I want credit. I was dropping off my tithe at church. And I came out. And I saw...
Are you boasting? This is kind of pharisaical.
I would never do that.
Nobody in the history of radio. This is the first time. This is the first time in the history of radio someone's been like, I want to tell you a story. And it starts with, I was dropping off my tithe at church.
The
I thought you said tie. And I thought, why is he dropping off his tithe?
No, not my tithe.
Wait a second.
My tithe.
Yeah, okay.
But I didn't... The doors were closed. So I was like, oh, I was frustrated. I didn't know.
So you told God,
there.
Well, I tried.
So I said, well, that's not my fault.
Oh.
But as I was walking back, I was walking in a weird place because I was trying other doors. And I saw a tire on the opposite side that I didn't normally see. It had what I would describe as a goiter on it. And if you don't know what a goiter is, it's a large growth that comes out the side of the tire.
A large growth.
And it was bulbous and looked like it was ready to explode.
You are strike two on disgusting words
so
in this story.
I had to suddenly, this is at 9:30 this morning or 9 o'clock, so I had to suddenly call my mechanic and say, oh my gosh, I need you to fix this because I didn't think I could make it here. I thought this thing was going to explode.
I have a conspiracy theory on, I've like looked into this a little bit on flat tires. Do you know where you picked up whatever you picked up?
What do you mean?
Did you get a flat? I mean,
no, it wasn't flat. It was just about to blow up.
It's like a Dr. Pimple Popper situation?
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was full of that stuff, too.
So what did you do? Did you put a flat on it?
No, I took it to the mechanic, and he was able to dig through everything and find one random tire that he's like, oh, I think I can get this on there. And then here's the crazy thing. Right after that, I was like, oh, I need to, because I was going to take you home today because you came straight from the airport. Yeah. I was going to clean out my car for you.
Oh, is it that bad?
So I was.
You weren't going to clean it out. You were going to hide everything.
Just the main seat.
Just the part I can see. Don't look at
me. I pulled over after he put that tire on and went to a Dollar General and I started cleaning it out. And then I went into the Dollar General because I felt bad that I didn't buy anything. And I went to buy something and I couldn't find my key. All of a sudden, the key that for the car was gone.
Oh, no.
So I had to dig through the trash outside of Dollar General, and then I found that key. And that was all for you.
There are so many flat tires. This has almost been a YouTube poll. It might still be, if you've had a flat tire in the last 3 to 4 months. I feel like there's been something done to the roads where people are picking up nails. Because I know so many people. I've had two. Flat tires.
I picked one up.
Well, the potholes are just terrible. That's how I got mine.
Well, mine have been nails for sure. The YouTube live chat poll today: grade the first 100 days of the Trump administration. Ryan, your answer, real quick.
A.
Brad,
I'm an A on that as well.
Yeah, A. To me, it's an easy A. Ethan, your thoughts on the YouTube live chat poll today before we wrap?
Yeah, I'm giving him an A. I mean, everything that he is doing, if it hasn't gotten to the point where you're seeing the success in the results yet, the intention is clearly there and he's trying to get something to change.
Why don't you give us the results?
The results today for today's YouTube live chat poll, 254 votes on gray, the first 100 days of President Trump's administration. 67% give him an A, 28% give him a B/C, and only 2% give him a D, and 4% give him an F.
That's a 94% C or better. Thank you for being with us here today. I will, of course, be back with everybody tomorrow for more coverage. Stick around. Reardon Show coming up next.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A 3-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colone for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.